This is the Past Lives Podcast, episode 270, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Past Lives Podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday, and you can find it on almost every podcast app. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, then please join the Patreon campaign. This week I'm talking to Nicole Strickland about her book, The Afterlife Chronicles, exploring the connection between life, death and beyond. Nicole is an afterlife and paranormal researcher, author, podcaster and speaker. She is the founder, director and case manager of the San Diego's Paranormal Research Society. Nicole is the Ghost Research Society's California coordinator and is a consultant to other investigative teams. Since 2011, she has co-hosted the Spirits of the Adobe tours at the iconic Rancho Buena Vista Adobe. Nicole's been featured in a myriad of media outlets, discussing her work as a paranormal researcher, and along with Todd Bates, Nicole co-hosts Haunted Voices Radio, one of the longest-running radio programs featuring a plethora of guests from all areas of the supernatural. In late 2020, she debuted her radio show, The Afterlife Chronicles, which was selected by Feedspot as one of the top 25 programs on the afterlife. Well, hi, Nicole. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Simon. It really is an honor to be on your podcast. So thank you.
So we're going to be talking about your book. It's called The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond. I like this sentence you had at the beginning when you say many paranormal researchers talk about that one unexplained encounter that propelled their intrigue into the supernatural. So
yes.
What's yours?
Oh my goodness. I have many, but there's one in particular. And so I'll preface it by saying that I feel like it was almost destined for me to be on this path. I didn't know that when I was young, but obviously now that I've been in the field for about 20 years, it just seems like it was the right thing and it just happened for me. It's not something that I ever planned, but as far back as I can remember, even when I was in my infancy, we're talking 4 and 5 years old, I had experiences that I couldn't explain. I was born in Huntington Beach, California, then moved to Las Vegas and lived there for several years with my mom and dad. And I had experiences there in the house that I really couldn't explain. So I always had that. I've always been a curious person, and the paranormal, specifically ghosts and spirits, haunted locations, the afterlife, I've always had an interest in that. And think about, you know, what happens to us when we physically pass on from this mortal plane. So that interest stayed with me growing up, and it culminated into a very profound experience with my maternal grandmother. Her name was Helen Lopinto. And I share this story all the time. And here I was a senior at the University of Arizona. And so my grandmother called me the night before she passed, so October 24th, and she asked me if I was okay. Now, it's interesting because my grandmother used to always worry about the family, always wondering if they were okay, you know, things that was just her nature. So she called me and I had talked with her and I thought, well, that's rather odd. Why would she just randomly call me and ask me if I'm okay? It was just random, even though that's what she did. It was just random. So I talked with her on the phone for about 15, 20 minutes. Fast forward to the next day. So my mom, her daughter, of course, called me in the afternoon on October 25th, which was my mom's birthday. So her mom, my grandmother, passed away on her birthday, which is another interesting connection. But I could tell by my mom's voice that something wasn't right. And she said, Nicole, I love you so much, but grandma passed away early this morning. I was devastated, got on the plane to go back out to San Diego, spend some time with the family. And then when it was time for me to come back out to Tucson, Arizona, I started having, within that first week of her passing, I started having experiences in my apartment that I did not encounter prior to her death. Now, at first I thought, okay, I'm in an apartment. It's, you know, vibration. It's my neighbors. I chalked it up to being something that can be explained. But it started with the doorknobs in the apartment moving and rattling as if someone was trying to open the door. And an interesting caveat is my grandmother used to go around her house at night to make sure the doors were locked. So, but again, I didn't really put two and two together. A couple of nights later, I was on my bed studying, doing schoolwork, and all of a sudden I didn't see anything, but I felt a disembodied hand touch my face, and it felt as if it came from someone I knew and loved. And again, I at that point, I thought, oh, could she be coming through? I didn't really think much of it. But then a few nights later, again, this is all in 1 week, that culminated into me seeing her. And again, I was on my bed on my laptop doing schoolwork, and me seeing her in my left peripheral vision, her full-bodied spirit form. It looked as though there was a halo or a spotlight shining against her. So it created this white halo around her. She looked about 10 years younger. She was wearing one of her favorite blue and white flowered dresses. She didn't say anything, but she had a smile on her face. And it seemed to play out in slow motion. And it, I would say in time, in our time, maybe lasting about 2 seconds. And then as I watched, I saw her fade away. And so that's when I knew, that's when I put all these, you know, experiences together, and I figured, you know, she's definitely trying to, you know, my cat's meowing, sorry, hopefully you're not hearing that. I figured, okay, you know what, all those experiences mean something. There's some sort of connection that she's trying to make. But at first I thought, could it be me projecting this? Could it be some sort of like bereavement hallucination or anything like that? But as I've thought about it over the years, I really do think that she did make a visitation. I think she knew before I did that I was able to sense spiritual energies and channel them. And it was just such a beautiful gift. And that is what propelled me to get in the field. And so here I am 20 plus years later, and it's been such a learning journey. It really has.
When you had that experience, was it scary, or did you feel quite happy with it?
That experience with her, I was not at all threatened or scared. It was a comforting experience. It was very comforting. It was very peaceful. And I almost knew just innately at that point that she was okay. And what's interesting is I told my mom about it. And so then my mom and I decided to openly talk with her and let her know that she's okay. You know, she doesn't have to worry about the family anymore, anything like that. And then that whole experience stopped. Now she does come around, especially around anniversaries and important events and things of that nature. But I do feel that she's definitely spirit and not here as an earthbound or anything like that. So I really credit my grandmother for you know, commencing my journey into afterlife and paranormal study, for sure.
And it's interesting that she was able to appear, because
yes,
some of the people that I've talked to on this podcast talk about how for the spirit, it takes a lot of energy to do that and a lot of concentration. So she must have really wanted to show herself to you.
I think so. And like I said earlier, at first I thought, could I be projecting this because of my grief? You know, I was in intense grief. You know, this was within a week after her passing. So I did speculate on that. And maybe that was part of it, but I really do believe that it was her that really wanted to visit. And it was so strong. She was as solid as if you look at me or me looking at you. It was incredible. And when she appeared, and again, like I said, it played out in slow motion. It really only lasted about 2 seconds, but it seemed longer in full color, of course. I felt extremely peaceful. It was just like this intense love and peace that flowed through me at that moment.
And you say that it was almost as if she was actually there. It wasn't like this Hollywood depiction of a ghost where they're transparent.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly how it felt. And she didn't say anything, but just very strong in her presence. And from my perspective, from my visual, when I saw, I wasn't like my third, you know, eye seeing her. It wasn't that I saw her in my mind's eye. I visually saw her with my sight and my vision. And it was just absolutely incredible. And so I've talked to so many people that have these sorts of experiences that propelled and commenced their journey into studying these fields, paranormal study, afterlife study. And maybe they've had an interest like I did for so many years, but that one encounter, maybe it's a series of encounters for some people, but that one for me, like I said, I credit my grandmother. I'm very indebted to her for this. So.
And you said that you felt like this is destined. So would you say that it's like you're on a spiritual path and you keep getting nudges, little things happen, and it's each time it's a step forward?
That's a great way of putting it. You said it better than I could ever say it. And it's yes, it's like a destined feeling, like, okay, I was meant to be on this path. It feels right. I have such an innate passion for this. But in these last 20 years, I've learned so much more, not only about myself and my own growth, but of course, you know, I used to have this fear of dying and all this. Now I know it's not the end, it's the beginning. And it's like you said, it's every little experience I have really opens me up more spiritually. And so it's a wonderful path to be on.
And you say in the book that you wholeheartedly believe in life after death.
I do.
Have you ever been religious? Would you say you're religious now, or it's more like you'd say you're spiritual?
Interesting question. So my mom's side of the family, well, my dad's too, but my mom's side of the family, they were very religious Catholics. I'm, you know, mostly Italian. So I was baptized Catholic and all of that. And I went to Catholic school growing up. But as an adult, I wouldn't say that I'm religious. I'm just more spiritual. So if I had to say anything, it's not really, I'm not religious, but more of like a spiritualist. So yeah. And I don't know, some people may differ on this. I feel that in some aspects, you should probably keep religion and studying the paranormal separate, but I can see in other aspects, you know, where they're intertwined. So
one of the things you talk about is this afterlife, the place that you go to, and it's almost like from different parts of the research you get different answers. There's
yes.
a place that was, I think, in the spiritualists way back 100 years ago, they talk about somewhere called Summerland that was almost mm-hmm. an idyllic countryside where everybody had wonderful houses. But then if you look other research, they say it's more like a space of light, and you don't have a body, and it's a whole other experience.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And, you know, I of course, I've never been to the afterlife in this life. Now, if you're getting into past lives, of course, and I've been told many times that I'm an old soul, and I feel that I am. So I do believe that this isn't my first rodeo. And maybe that's one of the reasons for why people that are old souls, you know, it'd be an interesting study to see if people that are old souls have more of a recollection or more of an innate knowledge of life after death or the afterlife. It could be just because they're recollecting their experiences in past lives of being in the afterlife. NDEs, near-death experiences, I mean, from people across the world, we're talking children, adults, the elderly, different cultures, different backgrounds, they report similar traits when they are in that state where their heart stops and they're not breathing and they have that so-called near-death experience or even a shared death experience. And it's similar characteristics of describing colors being more vivid than what we can see on Earth. They're able to and almost look at, well, not look with vision, but I guess embrace where they are and have it match what they knew in their culture. So different landscapes, just more beautiful landscapes, everything more vivid, everything is more heightened, more of a spiritual awareness. I mean, there's all kinds of these similar different traits. And so that's something I think that's really interesting and almost gives us a glimpse of where we go. And I don't know, I believe that as mortals, we're not perhaps able to know everything about the afterlife, but we're able to get glimpses through people's experiences, reading about near-death experiences, memories or connections with departed loved ones. So we get little glimpses of what awaits for us, but I don't think we're permitted to know everything.
Yeah, there's so many questions coming up right now.
Totally.
Yeah, one of the things is you say in the book, one's inner state of being is mirrored in his or her afterlife's surroundings. And it's that thing, I think, I mentioned Summerland earlier, which mm-hmm. was brought up by the College of Psychic Studies, who are in England, and Summerland was a kind of idyllic England.
Right.
Maybe people in India, when they die, they don't go to Summerland that's an idyllic England. They'll go to an idyllic India. And same people with Japan or in their country.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was meaning when I was talking about there, from all these different accounts, people recollect that, okay, they were able to go to a place where the surroundings were very similar to what they knew in the mortal life. Now, does that happen to everyone? I don't know, but there's so many accounts from year after year, different people, all walks of life. So there has to be some sort of truth to that. It's not just one or two people that are reporting this. It's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that have these NDEs that have these sorts of similar traits. And so with that, I think you really have to pay attention to that. Gives us some, you know, all these similarities. It's like, well, there has to be some validity to this because of the amount of people that are reporting this.
Like you say, there's similarities in a way, but also
right.
near-death experiences seem to be very personal to the person that's having that experience. And it's almost like it's been constructed specifically for them by right. some kind of spiritual beings that know them so well.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's, you know, there you hear the stories of people, you know, I was able to, my loved ones were waiting for me, or one of my guides, spirit guides, was waiting for me, even in the hours to weeks before people die. A lot of hospice nurses report this, where they'll see and witness the patient almost talking to someone in thin air. And then and across the world. And so, you know, these, what are they called?
Deathbed visions.
No. Thank you. Thank you. I was like, I can't believe I forgot that. But yeah, deathbed visions, very, 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 very popular across the board. And there was once, I don't know if it was a study. I think it was a study, but it was something like 30 or 40% of nurses reported patients in the hours to weeks before he or she passed having discussions with loved ones, but yet those loved ones weren't there physically.
I talked to Dr. Penny Sartori, who is a near-death experience researcher, but she was a nurse for 17 years, and she said Her first job was in a hospice, and mm-hmm. they went and they had, it was a night shift, and she sat down with all the nurses and they were having the briefing just so they know what's going to happen. And the nurse giving the briefing said, oh, and the lady in room 7, she seems to be talking to people that are not there, so we expect her to die tonight. And Penny Sartori said, oh, I see what's going on. I'm the new one. They're playing a trick on me. This person's not really talking to somebody who's not there. But sure enough, she went in the room and it was happening. And then that person died a few hours later. And so that kind of suggested that those nurses see it so often, they use it as a signal, a sign that somebody's going to pass soon.
Absolutely. And my mom actually she's a school nurse now, but when she was younger, she worked in hospice, and she's told me stories. There was one patient in particular. We sat down over coffee, and she told me it was a younger patient, female, I think around like in her 20s, I would say. And she was in the process of passing, and my mom was in the room with her and her mother, of course. And my mom said, I just kept telling her, you know, just, you know, if you may see a bright light, you know, feel free to go into it. You're free. You're not going to have any more pain. Go towards your loved ones. And she said, as she was talking to her, she could see the patient's body language just in the way the body was just relaxing and almost succumbing to it. And it was a very, very peaceful passing.
Hello, listeners. This is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. and I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. Sometimes I believe nurses would see what you'd call a shared death experience, where maybe they see something lift from the body, or there's some kind of weird light in the room.
Exactly. Absolutely. I had someone on my show, my gosh, about a year ago, and he had an interesting shared death experience where he and his significant other both experienced and had a similar experience with the passing of a family member. And that, you know, you don't hear of shared death experiences too often, but I think it's more common than we think, of course.
So we're going off on a tangent. I wanted to ask you about something to do with Summerland and this space that we may go into in the afterlife when you first arrive there, that maybe it's an idyllic earth, but then perhaps we move on from there. It's almost like, I don't know if you call it a staging area, or it's like your introduction to the afterlife and you get somewhere that's comfortable. But after a while, you progress and you realize, I don't need this body anymore and I don't need this house. Do you come across this stuff?
Yeah, I've done a lot of reading, on the afterlife, of course, and talking with people. And there's this belief, too, that there's different states of spirithood. So you can, or different ranks, if you will. So when people go, they might advance more to a higher realm quickly. Others, it may take longer. So I do believe in that. And it's interesting to know what the surroundings would be like, I guess, in the highest state, or is it different compared to certain people? You know, so there's all these questions that remain, but I do believe, like, for example, my cat Kaylee, when she passed, she lived until like 18 and a half and she had all these health conditions. And when she passed, I just feel that she ascended very quickly because of these consistent dream visitations, not just regular dreams. We're talking dream visitations that her and I have had. And she passed on December 19th of 2021. And there, since that time, I've had about 15 of these dream visitations. And it's always the same sort of atmosphere when it happens. I'm in that hypnagogic sort of state where I'm kind of in between sleep and awake state. And it's such an intense visitation where, I mean, if you had a camera on me, I probably would, you would see that I'm still in bed, but yet my astral self is reaching for her and able to touch her and see her and all of that. And it's always the same surroundings when that happens. It's the same room. I'm laying in bed the same way I did when I fell asleep. The lights are off, but I'm able to see her, feel her warmth, feel her purring. And I know that's reminiscent of when she was in the physical, but it's not just a regular dream. It's such an intense situation where it's like I feel like my astral self is able to kind of come out a little bit. And then she comes on my plane and we're almost able to meet in the middle. So I theorize that perhaps she ascended quickly to a more higher advanced state, which allows her to be able to come and we can have these dream visitations. It's just a theory of mine, but it's incredible.
And the thing about these dreams is it's the way they feel. I think that's got a big part of it, because you could describe that to someone who is a skeptic and they'll say, no, it's just a dream. But there's the way it feels is quite different to a normal dream.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you wake up with this sense of peace, stillness, like all-encompassing love. And you just, and sometimes I've woken up from it and I'll tear up and I'll cry, not because necessarily I'm sad. Of course, I miss her, but it's just, it's a gift. You wake up feeling like you were granted a gift, being able to meet with your loved one in this sort of visitation. And it doesn't happen to everyone, but it's, like you said, it's just, it's a feeling that you can describe with adjectives and words, but you really do need to feel, like, experience it to really truly grasp what it's like. But it's love, it's all-encompassing peace, a sense that everything is okay. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, and we've gone off on another tangent.
I know. that's my, I guess that's my MO here. Oh my gosh.
I was going to ask you about your view on something. As we talked about Summerland and then progressing from there, and then we have reincarnation. So it's something I've asked mediums about. It's like, mm-hmm. if somebody's reincarnated, then how can you be communicating with them if they're back on Earth?
You know, first of all, I do believe in reincarnation. And it's interesting. You hear stories of people almost having similar physical attributes to the person they reincarnated from, if that makes sense, or it's they remember certain things about that individual that they wouldn't have, known prior. So there's all these signs, if you will, of people reincarnating. I think spirit communication and being able to connect with someone, it's almost I want to understand exactly how it happens, but it's more the experience. I think it's more what's more important is to experience it as opposed to trying to analyze how it happens. But I think it's more of like a soul to soul connection. So you don't really need the physical body per se, but it's when you get to that state where you are communicating with spirit or someone that's reincarnated, it's almost like the souls are communicating. That's just my take on it. But what have other people said? Because that's something I think about too. You know, all these theories about how it happens and how we're able to connect with and communicate with certain people or certain spirits versus others.
Oh, well, communication, I don't know. I've talked to mediums and they've talked about going to all sorts of classes and maybe mm-hmm. spending 15 years every week. They're practicing and getting lessons and they're going to colleges.
And yep.
Throughout those whole 15 years, they don't actually have sittings with anybody. They don't charge a penny until they feel they've really got to it.
Right. You know, another thing too that just came up too is, you know, more and more people nowadays are opening up to life after death, opening up to sharing their encounters with departed loved ones. So I think it's creating almost like if you throw a rock into a pond and you see that ripple in the water, it's people are more open to it. So it's creating more of this. The bridge between both worlds is getting stronger. And so I think that's one of the reasons why more and more people are having these sorts of encounters. I think there's just such a beautiful duality between mortality and the afterlife. And there could be many reasons as to why this is, but it's almost like something out there in the cosmos that is permitting the two worlds to connect more than ever before. And so I think also individuals are more are desiring more to grow spiritually and be enlightened. And so I think that all contributes to this.
Yeah, because if we go back in time, go back before the Victorian era, there right. wasn't really anybody that was a medium and did that job. It was only here we had the College of Psychic Studies, and over in your side of the ponds, you had your group who were spiritualists studying all mm-hmm. this, and mediumship started becoming a thing. But before that, that wasn't anybody doing that connection, was there? There were the shamans and people?
Yeah, and perhaps not known. Maybe they were doing it, but it just wasn't as, because with spiritualism, it just went populated, and gosh, from like what, 1840s to 1920s, that's a pretty long period. So maybe before that they were, but it just wasn't known to the masses as much. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
but even going back into, I mean, thousands of years, in different, every culture, I shouldn't say every culture, but many cultures have pondered the question of, okay, what happens to us when we physically pass from the mortal plane? And so there's this belief in some sort of life existing after we die, but maybe there's different differences in terms of what happens to the soul or what happens to the body, but yet there's this belief among many cultures that yes, there, you know, this isn't the end. We do go somewhere else. And so that to me is very, very intriguing. But even going back hundreds and hundreds of years ago, even in literature, for example, like Dante Alighieri's, you know, The Divine Comedy talks about the afterlife, going back to Plato and Descartes and all of these folks, that you see that. So, but it's for some reason, I think nowadays it's just more, it's more accepted and it's in, and it's embraced a little bit more. Perhaps, you know, social media has something to do with that as well. But I think there's something else greater, maybe elusive, as to why the two worlds are connecting more, it seems. That's just my thought. So
I interviewed a guy called Dr. Gregory Shushan, and he'd written a book called Near-Death Experiences in Indigenous Religions.
Ooh.
And he did tons of research, and he found all these stories of tales that happened to this person or that person hundreds or thousands of years ago. But if we look at those tales today, we say, hey, this is a typical near-death experience. And so maybe, you know, that's where these things are springing up from. And it may be the idea of heaven and hell came from people having NDEs.
That very well could be. Absolutely. Very well. It's just so intriguing to hear people from all walks of life, different backgrounds, different jobs, different career aptitudes, different cultures, describing similar traits and signs of NDEs. It baffles me in many ways, but it's also a very beautiful thing.
And there's also this thing of NDEs where people will see something while their body's dead, and that is later verified.
Right. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And then also too, you know, people will, after these encounters, they'll have suddenly developed more intuition or more psychic aptitudes. They'll be less interested in materialism and money and just want to grow spiritually. And that's an interesting, very, very, very fascinating aspect of it.
I want to change the subject now, if that's okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Because in your book, you talk about electronic communications with spirit, maybe EVPs, spirit photographs. Do you think this is something that's we're going to move forward with, and perhaps we'll be able to develop technology that can communicate?
This is a question or a topic that I've often thought about on my own, and I believe that yes, with the advances in technology, we might be able to develop something that will even be better than some of these devices today, standard digital analog recorders, spirit boxes, ghost boxes. So we'll just have to see. But then it could also maybe go the other way too. And if something's designed that maybe is too advanced, would that interfere with spirit, not interfere with the actual communication, but interfere with capturing it in hearing what is said? I don't know, but I look forward to it. I think that we probably could develop something where it's just more clear voices coming through, you know, things of that nature. But then the question will always remain, is this absolute proof of a spirit voice? You know, but it's when you have so many captures from many, many thousands, millions of people, it says something that, you know, it's, and there's different theories, you know, maybe spiritual beings are able to use the frequency of these devices, the energy from these devices to communicate. You know, the question of, well, how are they able to imprint their voices on these sorts of gadgets? That remains. That question, you know, remains unanswered, and we might never know the answer to that question. But it seems highly plausible based on the thousands of EVPs and disembodied voices that have been recorded that, you know, there's something to this. And I can say that from my own experience, just with my captures alone.
Because some of them that I hear can be so vague and so distant, and you really struggle to work out what's being said. And it
right.
makes me think it's like we talked earlier about your grandmother, that they have to use a lot of energy and they really have to concentrate. And maybe right. that's why it's so vague.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's obviously different classes of EVP from A, B, and C to R. And that's the R ones are interesting. It's R for reverse. And I've had this happen a few times where we'll capture either an EVP. An EVP is a voice you don't hear with the naked ear at the time of recording, but you go back and hear it after. A disembodied voice is something you do hear, which may or may not be recorded. If it's recorded, we term it an audible voice phenomenon. So in both EVP and AVP, I've had situations where in regular playback mode, I won't quite understand what the energy or entity is saying. But then if I reverse that clip of the audio, it's completely understandable. And so that's happened a few times, or just energies talking to each other. There have been situations.
Is there a time where you have EVPs where it sounds like there's an actual intelligence behind it that's trying to communicate, but other times it's more like it's just some kind of astral recording that's being recorded?
Absolutely, yes. That happens a lot to many of us. And it's sometimes difficult to determine if it's something residual that would happen regardless versus something that's intelligent. And so what I look for is, are the answers to questions, you know, if we're asking certain questions, are the answers or the words that come through answers to those questions, or if it's a phrase or something that's said that is related to that site's history, so it's historically relevant. Those are two things that I look for. But sometimes you will get just residual types of vocalizations or sounds or electronic noise phenomenon, things of that nature, or just some of the, like, you could be randomly doing a session and someone pops in and says hello. Okay, well, maybe that's residual, maybe that's intelligent. But it's also too a feeling too that some people get, regardless of what's said in the actual recording and what you capture. It's almost, you got to trust your intuition too. Because it's a sense that, wow, okay, this is someone that really wants to have a conversation. And is it someone that's coming through frequently? Like, we've had that on some of our investigations where we'll be doing a session, whether it's an EVP session or an ITC, instrumental transcommunication session. And sometimes we'll get what seems to be, without doing forensic voice analysis, but just on the onset, voices that come through frequently that seem to be interacting. So sometimes it's very easy to tell, and other times you just have to critically think about it.
You have that, is it residual? I don't know if you call it live. So there's residual recordings that almost seem like they've been recorded, and then there's an active communication. But you also get that with ghosts, don't you? People see a ghost and they just seem to do the same thing over and over, like it's a recording.
Yeah, like it's interesting when that happens. Like, for example, and sometimes, again, it's hard to know, but if it's a sighting that people have many, many, many times, different people over the same, you know, over different years, and if it's a sighting that occurs in the same spot over time, that most likely is residual. Like, for example, Gettysburg. You know, let's assuming they're not doing like any sort of reenactments that day, and you're just out there and you hear a phantom cannon going off. That most likely is residual. It's a psychic imprint. It's an emotional imprint on the property, on the land. And that usually occurs with places that have seen, that are very, very historical, that have seen lots of death or very heightened emotions, whether it's theaters could be very, you know, euphoria theaters versus battlefields and hospitals where people passed away. So again, it's hard to know, but if it's, like I said, something that is being seen typically in the same spot and in the same way over periods of time, that is most likely residual.
And you have sometimes, I think there's people do, like they try and help spirits to move over and they say, you know, go into the light. And those spirits, they might have died 100 years ago, but they have no concept of time. They still think right. that maybe they died, or they don't know they died, and it's just the next day. It's so weird how this time thing works.
Yeah, time is an interesting thing. You know, and I read a lot about quantum mechanics and, you know, quantum theories on the survival of human consciousness. And time is an interesting aspect. And many believe that the past, present, and future is just all mixed into one lump. And I'm starting to question that too. I mean, maybe it's possible. But yeah, spirit, you know, and I've actually participated in a few sessions where we've tried to help an energy cross over or become more peaceful. And that's an interesting topic. I don't know. It's my belief that it's not really up to us to make a decision for that specific entity, but we can facilitate that. And maybe they just need some reassurance and some more knowledge that, okay, well, there is a better place out there. Okay, I can move on. So that's a whole different topic, but it is fascinating. And the times that I've participated in I've been asked, okay, well, how do you know that an entity or an earthbound has crossed and is now at peace? It's a feeling you get. It's this visceral feeling of just all-knowing peace, and that you just know. It's hard to explain in words. You just know that energy moved on and is no longer stuck. Very fascinating.
Yeah, and also this thing about time and reincarnation. And so if
I know
there's like one life after another as we see it, but if in the afterlife there is no time, that would mean our soul is experiencing all of those lives in the same moment.
It very well could be, absolutely. I mean, when you think about when we pass on and we move into the afterlife, that's what we call it, or the hereafter, it's in a way the soul's progression. The soul is progressing. And there might be more lives after that too, but it's the natural soul's progression of maturity and the soul just doing what it needs to do to reach its true divine state. And to me, that's extremely, extremely intriguing. And reincarnation, I mean, maybe reincarnation has a lot to do with why we're able to remember certain things, or we're able to know and pick up certain memories or certain vibes from certain spiritual energies. Just maybe we're able to all tap into that. I almost think like there's this big, if you think of your physical body and there's a bunch of neurons and all these connections, nerve connections in our physical bodies, I almost feel like that there's something that's almost what the afterlife and all these realms are, that there's just some sort of connection and different firings. When the nerves fire, it's like if you equate that to the afterlife, it's like people maybe across the world are having the same sort of encounter, maybe with the same spirit, but maybe it's that the energy just happened to spike at that very instant. It's hard to explain, but I don't know. I tend to think outside the box, obviously, as you could tell. But it's great.
So what do you make of spirit photography? Because we've got a family picture that's really quite odd. It's taken in this house and there's somebody sitting on the sofa and you can see their head. You can't quite see their face. And you see it and you think, oh yeah, I know who that is. And this person died years ago. There's this big streak of white light across the middle of the picture. And then at the bottom of the picture, crawling in front of the sofa, is my daughter when she was, I don't know, maybe 18 months old.
Oh, my goodness.
The thing is, the person sitting on the sofa died before my daughter was born. And so how is it that they're both in the same photograph? And what is this weird white mist?
If I sat here and said I absolutely know why, I'd be a fraud in a way. You know, there's still so many unknowns. But curious, what camera was used to capture that photo?
Oh, that was just a small sort of Kodak with the film in it. It's not digital.
Right. And I there's this whole theory, too, about cameras that are like digital cameras, the whole orb phenomenon. I'll get to that in a second, but the whole orb phenomenon, and you know, it's more common with digital cameras and most often can be explained away. But cameras that have film, magnetic film or film, it's thought that maybe energies can emulsify themselves on the film of that specific camera. But see, that's another aspect of it. Like, how my mind wanders, and how is it that spiritual energies are able to imprint themselves on photographs? How is it? Is it some sort of electronic frequency? I don't know. But even going back to the spiritualist days, William Mumler is actually one of the, I believe, the first or one of the first spirit photographers of his time. And of course, he faked some of his photos. But and back in that day, you know, a lot of people started with spirit photography, and it was proved that they were fraudulent and all of this with the ectoplasm and all of that. But I think that still there were still some interesting photos that were captured. So, I mean, I don't know exactly how they're able to capture on these photographs. That's just an unknown. But, you know, the white light, though, that could be different things. I mean, it could just be that energy's energy. So maybe it was the way in which he imprinted himself. I don't know. But that's fascinating. I would love to see that. I don't know if you'd want to share. I'd love to see that photo.
I'm not sure where it is. I'd have to ask my wife.
You know, Dale Katzmarek, I'm the California coordinator for the Ghost Research Society, and Dale Katzmarek is very well known. You probably know who he is, very well known paranormal researcher in the US. And he's the president of the Ghost Research Society. He's very interested in spirit photography and has collections of very authentic spirit photographs on his website, ghostresearch.org. But it's fascinating how energies can imprint their physical attributes onto a photograph.
Yeah, I've got a photograph a medium sent me. I interviewed him. But there's a picture of him when he was in a garden at home in England, and he's like 5 years old, and standing behind him is his grandmother and grandfather, and they look transparent, and they died before he was born. But he said with this photograph, the more time passes, the less transparent that couple will look. It's like the years pass and they're imprinting more and more into the photograph.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow. And I've heard this before, but it's very rare, I think, for that. It's so interesting. I don't know if it's a psychokinetic thing. I don't know. I think it has to do with energy of some sort, of course. But yeah. Is it like a psychokinetic sort of thing? I don't know.
And do you know the Skoll experiment? Have you heard of that?
Yes. Yes.
Because they would get a little Kodak reels of film in an unopened box, and they put it in this lock box in the middle of the table when they do a seance, and then they take it out and there'd be pictures on there, but it was brand new. It had never been opened.
Can you imagine? It's thought and theorized that ghostly energies exist in the near infrared spectrum. And that's why obviously a lot of us researchers use, you know, full spectrum or infrared cameras or surveillance cameras to monitor the environment. But just using regular either digital photography or 35 millimeter film or even a Polaroid film, it's fascinating how it happens and how, like I said, the physical attributes of someone, and it could be a picture of when they were younger, it could be a picture of when they were older. It's fascinating. I mean, maybe it has to do with time too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Going back to the time aspect too.
And have you heard of Ted Sirios? I think that was his name. He produced what he called thoughtographs. And
yes.
Was it they had those kind of Instamatic photographs, and he'd hold it to his forehead, wouldn't he, and concentrate, and then they'd develop it and there'd be a picture on there. So there's some ESP thing happening there, isn't there?
It could be some sort of psychic connection, intuitive connection. I mean, even like with instrumental transcommunication, they'll set up cameras to point at a TV. And there have been times Ernst Senkowski, the one who pretty much founded instrumental transcommunication, I believe in the 70s, there's actually images of him appearing on television screens in these sorts of experiments. And it's mind baffling. You want to know exactly how that happens, but that's the whole thing. I often question, are we mortals permitted to know the how and why? We're able to experience it, but maybe not know how it happens.
Yeah, maybe there's spiritual council, and they're looking down on Earth and say, well, look, you've been reincarnated to learn a particular lesson. You're not supposed to know about your other lives. You're not supposed to know about the spirit world. You're there for to be in the school to learn something.
Right, absolutely.
So I wanted to ask you about somebody you write about called Dawn, who had these experiences.
Oh, my good friend Dawn. Yes. Yeah, she's a dear, dear friend of mine. Yeah, she... did you have a question, specific question?
Yeah, one of them was that she saw an older male figure that was a ghost, and then later she saw a photograph of them?
Yes. Yeah, that was her, I believe. Gosh, I mean, I wrote the story. I want to say it was her great-grandfather or her grandfather. And when she was, if I remember correctly, when she was real young, she would communicate with him and see him. And then later on, when she grew older, she was able to pick him out and say, and know who he is. And so I believe it was her and only her that was able to, encounter him and communicate with him and see him when she, I think she was around like 2 or 3 when this happened. I'd have to go back to the story. But it's, and it's interesting how that happens. And kids, I think, are so, she's very, very intuitive, I believe, has some very genuine psychic aptitudes and channeling abilities. But it's interesting with kids. I think kids have more of this innate intuition, or maybe not more, but they're able to use it more because their minds aren't polluted as much with ego yet. And, it's I think when you're born, maybe at that state, when you're a young kid, you're more your natural self, I guess. And then as you get older, you lose touch with it. I don't know. But yeah, she communicated with him, described him and all of that. And then she saw a photo one day and she was like, oh my gosh, that's the man who I was talking to.
Do you have plans for another book?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm actually working on one now with Marie D. Jones and Denise Agnew, and that's about women in the paranormal. So we're interviewing a bunch of different women in the paranormal about their experiences and their types of research. So we're working on that. And then I might have another afterlife book in me there's several I have, but it's hard to pick which one I'm going to do next because I'm one of these people that likes to work on one or two at once. I don't like to do several. It's just that's how I am. So, but yes, there definitely is another one in the future. So,
oh, great. Yeah, you'll have to come back to the podcast and when that published.
I would love to. Oh my God, this was amazing. You're a great interviewer. I love the thought-provoking questions. So, yeah, this has been awesome.
Well, the book's called The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes. People can get that on Amazon. Is it other places?
Yeah, so right now it's on Amazon, but I'm also going to publish with Ingram Spark, so it'll get worldwide distribution. So once I do that, you'll be able to get it on different retailers. So I'll probably be doing that either this week or next week. So
brilliant. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
And that was an interview with Nicole Strickland about her book, The Afterlife Chronicles, Exploring the Connection Between Life, Death, and Beyond. And if you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And the Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast. And I release new episodes every Monday. And you can find it on almost every podcast app. And I've also added a new tier to the Past Lives Podcast Patreon campaign, where for $12.50 a month, you can get the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes every week, as well as the Past Lives Podcast extended episodes. And including the Alien UFO Podcast episodes, there are now more than 100 extended episodes available in the back catalogue. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the links are in the show notes. And look out for the Past Lives Podcast episodes called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every Thursday. And there is a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group. If you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.
Was there a thing also with a car accident where she was saved?
Yeah. So this is, I think this has to go with either one's own intuitive voice speaking, or it could be.